We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Congressman, your proposal to boost manufacturing in Rhode Island faces an uphill battle due to Republican control of the House. So short of passing that, what do you think state officials, federal officials should do to try and increase manufacturing jobs here in Rhode Island?
I've been convening a working group of manufacturers to help position Rhode Island to compete for both the president's new initiative on manufacturing, but also to compete for this new Make It in America challenge grant. But, you know, what we need to do is pretty obvious. We need to improve workforce training so that people have the skills necessary for the jobs that are available in manufacturing. We need to end the tax breaks that we currently give to companies for shipping American jobs overseas and incentivize keeping those manufacturing jobs here. We need to be sure that manufacturers have the ability to access capital to buy new equipment, retrofit their factories, and improve their exports. This is an area where Rhode Island is uniquely positioned, I believe, to really lead the country in terms of the resurgence or renaissance of American manufacturing. We have, you know, a great history of it. We have great facilities here. We have a workforce that's capable of doing this work. And if we just change some of the policies in Washington that undermine American manufacturing and instead enact policies that promote it, I think it'll make a real difference here.
Let's go to Scott.
You know, we talk about manufacturing a lot, but it's never going to be the job engine it was. And secondly, from the people you talk to Electric Boat or Taco over in Cranston, and one thing is the increase in automation, in productivity, and efficiency means that one person is doing the manufacturing job that three or four people used to do.
Right. No, there's no question about it. And that's something we should embrace. That's going to continue to be the case. The most recent example of that, of course, is 3D printing, where you're actually fabricating an object, you know, in a way that molds used to have to do. And so one of the ways you have to do that is you've got to obviously increase your exports and innovation and new designs that grow out of new technologies. It's a new kind of manufacturing. It's more advanced manufacturing, and it requires a higher level of skill. And you're right, it doesn't generate the great number of jobs, but it's still the area where we're growing jobs in this country, and we want to be sure Rhode Island gets its fair share.
Congressman Langevin, and you are among the Democrats backing a proposal to raise the minimum wage from $7.25 to $10.10 over 3 years. How do you respond to critics who say that that would lead to a reduction in jobs?
The argument's just not true. There's good data now that shows, in fact, I have the report with me, that shows that the increase of the minimum wage, in fact, will not cost jobs. What it, in fact, is likely to do is cause the growth of the middle class, people who then have additional resources to buy the goods and services that business produces and lead to job growth. This is a very simple idea. No one in this country should work hard, work full time, and have to raise their family in poverty, period.
Why'd you vote against the progressive budget?
The progressive budget, you know, I voted for the Black Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus, for the Democratic Van Hollen budget. I'm a part of the Progressive Caucus, but the Progressive Caucus blew through the cap. We set a cap in spending under the Budget Control Act that the president supported. I don't think it was realistic to have a budget proposal that didn't honor that cap. And so while we have to make real investments in job training and education and the appropriate cuts in other departments, I don't think you can just have no cap in spending, which is what the Progressive budget did.
Is the problem with federal spending the welfare state or the warfare state?
Well, there's no question we are, if you look at what we have spent over the last decade in Afghanistan and Iraq, I have been a very strong proponent for ending the war in Afghanistan as quickly as we possibly can. We are spending enormous amounts of money, and frankly, they were put on the national credit card. And so when you look at the tax cuts for the top 2% that we didn't pay for and the spending for the wars that were put on the credit card, they are the two big drivers of our deficit.
Providence Mayor Angel Taveras and State Treasurer Gina Raimondo are among the Democrats expected to run for governor next year. How would you rank your preferred candidate?
I have tremendous respect for all the people who are thinking about running for governor. I have a great respect for our current governor, a great working relationship with him. I have a great respect for our mayor and think he's doing a terrific job. I have great respect for our treasurer. So, I think they're all terrific candidates. And it's very early to know kind of how this race will shake out. But we're lucky to have, you know, three great people.
Why haven't we seen a Democrat elected as governor since Bruce Sundlin in 1992?
I don't know. I think it's a good question for a very Democratic state. I don't know the answer to that. I think we've had some great candidates.
Is it primaries?
I don't know. I don't know. Some people have suggested it's the theory of, you know, we have such a Democratic legislature that voters are interested in having someone at the state house who's sort of a balance against that. And maybe that's part of the thinking. I think if you look back, one of the most productive governors we had, may he rest in peace, was Governor Sondland, who worked really well with the Democratic majorities in both chambers. So.
Speaking of governors, would you welcome Lincoln Chafee into the Democratic Party?
We're a big tent. We welcome everybody.
Wondering at taxes, looking at the fiscal cliff deal that was finally made, it looks like Republicans got the better of the president and you Democrats in Congress. I mean, they preserved 94% of the Bush tax cuts.
Well, I think the compromise that was reached in that did not generate the revenues that the president articulated he wanted at the beginning and that we wanted as Democrats in the House. It was a compromise. It was the first time that those rates were raised in a very long time. So, but I think what the president was trying to establish there again was, if you look at the way we have approached deficit reduction, it has been a combination of generating revenues now through the fiscal cliff and cutting spending, and that framework has to continue. So I think it was the right compromise for the moment because it was balanced, but we have much more work to do.
The other thing is the sequester is really hurting Rhode Island. Aren't there Republican states that are also getting hit?
Yeah, in fact, I mean, I've had a couple of gatherings since I've been home to talk to folks about and hear from them about the impact of sequestration. Sequestration was designed to be a penalty, not a policy. A penalty so onerous that it would cause Congress to enact a reasonable compromise. And it's really hurting people. And what we're seeing is that it's hurting people sometimes in multiple ways. Your child is losing her slot at Head Start. You're losing primary care because a health center is getting cut. And you're losing a rental assistance voucher, the same family. So it's really compounded on top of deep cuts we've already made. So hopefully they're hearing that, other members of Congress, when they go home from their constituents, and they'll feel compelled to come back and find a substitution.
Do you expect the Rhode Island Senate to approve same-sex marriage this year?
Yes. I think the momentum is there, and I hope they will.
Has Senate President Teresa Pivoweed told you anything that leads you to that reinforces that view?
No, but every time I'm with the Senate President, I lobby her as forcefully as I can.
So you have personally talked to her about this?
Yes.
The Affordable Care Act, Democrats say that'll bring down the cost of health care over the long haul, but some critics feel that it's going to have an adverse effect on small businesses in the short term. Are they right to think that?
I think we're seeing already that it's bringing down the cost of healthcare. It's bending the cost curve by making investments in prevention and wellness and new medical technologies. And I think we're going to see more and more over time as more people are in the healthcare system and as there's a new payment system, as we reform the way we pay instead of for services, pay for wellness. So I think we're seeing that already. And I think small businesses are benefiting, obviously, from the tax credit and from a healthy and productive workforce. So I think on balance, we will see that this will continue to be a great benefit.
So you're not worried that a lot of small business people are upset about this?
No, I hear from small businesses, and I know for some businesses this imposes a cost, and I think we have to listen to that and figure out other ways that we can respond to that. But I think the tax credit is one way that healthcare reform does that. The healthy, productive workers is another way that it does that. And frankly, I think we want to live in a country where people have access to quality, affordable healthcare. And I think this will help achieve that.
How worried should Americans be about the saber rattling we're seeing in North Korea?
I think this is a new young leader who is untested, who is unknown, who I think doesn't have a lot of the kind of experiences that we would hope from someone in that position, and who's also a nuclear power and who has really no prior relationship with the North Korean military, and I think needs to demonstrate some strength in that respect. So I think what we have to be concerned about is not that he has the ability to do something to the United States, but that some misstep or miscalculation or error in this saber-rattling can lead to some serious event. And I think that's the danger.
You scored a larger-than-expected re-election victory last November over Republican Brendan Daugherty, and you keep up a very busy schedule when you're back here in the district. Is this motivated by a desire to win over voters who still might be skeptical or critical of how you handled your departure from City Hall in Providence?
It's part of my job. I mean, my responsibility in this position is to not only work hard in Washington, but when I'm home, to be sure that I have an opportunity to hear directly from the people I serve and to share information about what I'm working on. And it's, you know, and obviously I'm always interested in earning the respect and support of people who vote for me and send me to Washington to work on their behalf.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And Congressman David Cicilline.
Thank you very much.